Omaha Police Union Local 101 versus City of Omaha. I should note that Justice Miller Lerman is recused from this case, and also the next case of the day, which is Brandel versus City of Madison. With that, we may proceed. Mr. Hedekin, good morning.
Good morning. Morning, Your Honors. I'd like to inform you that my partner, Mark McQueen, the lead negotiator in this contract, is here at council table, so you know he's present. The issue before the court today is whether the trial court erred in failing to apply equitable relief and order the parties to the collective bargaining agreement to resume contract and negotiations for 2014. Our assertion is that the record overwhelmingly demonstrates that the answer is the court did in fact err and should have applied equitable relief. We ask that this court send this matter back with a remand to direct negotiations to resume for 2014. The starting point of the dispute between the parties stems from the terms of Article 47 of the Collective Bargaining Agreement, and that provision provides that either party may give written notice to the other before April 1st of the year in question.
Counsel, does it say may or shall?
Shall. Okay. It does say shall. Shall give such notice, and either one of them, if they do not give that notice, the contract rolls over on similar terms for another year. However, in these circumstances, this record demonstrates that the union and the city were engaged in negotiations both before April 1st and after April 1st without the giving of any such written notice, that no such written notice had been required or expected before those negotiations began, and that the record supports that equity requires that this case be remanded with direction to continue the negotiation process. The starting point of my argument on that is to look simply at the terms of negotiation. If we look at the Black's Law Dictionary, it is just simply to confer with another so as to arrive at the settlement of some matter. In this particular circumstance, I've cited for you a number of factors from this record that show that there is, in fact, a waiver of estoppel and other right to equitable relief. I'm going to focus on the undisputed facts within this because the court, as the final arbiter of equity, has the right to interpret de novo this record and may rely upon determinations of conflicting evidence, but the court made no determination of credibility in its order, and in this particular case, there's a
substantial... Well, the counsel, if it finds in favor of the plaintiff and against the defendant, isn't that a determination that it accepted the plaintiff's version of the facts as opposed to the defendant's? Are you saying they just completely ignored the record?
If we look at the opinion as it was articulated by the judge, he made no determinations, credibility determinations.
Well, the trial court generally doesn't say, I find that the defendant's witnesses weren't credible and I find the plaintiff's witnesses were. That's not usually a part of a court's order, is it?
Well, in some circumstances it would be, Judge, not all the time, but in this particular case, if we look at the rationale for the decision, it was based essentially on the language of the document and it was based upon undisputed facts, not disputed facts. But even
well,
if
wasn't it your position going into this that notice had to have been given by April 1st of 2013 to negotiate for the contract year 2014?
Yes, it was.
So how could you have relied upon statements made by the union that you were misled in not providing notice when you believed going in that you had to have given notice by April 1st of 2013?
Your Honor, in doing the analysis of an equitable estoppel, we focus on the acts of the defendant, what they did, and then the later change in the position that they take. If we look at the
but
acts...
But your belief was notice was already too late and that the contract had already rolled over.
That is correct. That is correct. That was our interpretation.
So how could you be misled by the union's statements that you had to give notice by April 1st of 2014?
We could be misled by that because ultimately the court determined that April 1st of 2014 was the deadline. There were discussions that began...
But I'm not talking about what the court determined. I'm talking about what you thought going into the negotiations or what you claim were negotiations if you believe that notice had already expired and the contract had rolled over by April 1st of 2013.
Well, we relied on that, Judge.
Well, how could you rely on any statements made by the union then that you were misled as to when you had to give notice.
We could, because the union was taking the position that it was due by April 1. We began negotiations and discussions about negotiating a rollover before April 1. And then after April 1, they requested notice. We began to have the discussions of the panel. Had we known, and Sergeant Wells himself said, I could have asked for notice before April 1, but I just forgot to do so. The fact remains is that they could have asked for the notice at that point. Had they asked for it, we would have given it, just as Mr. McQueen gave that notice at the point that Sergeant Wells asked for it. And that's how we relied on it. But I would like to further submit that this court has said in the Hornig decision that whether a waiver or an estoppel is found, it has equitable authority to make the determination that equity requires the waiver of that notice provision.
And so why would the union ask for a notice if they're willing to go along with the terms and a continuation of them?
I'm sorry, Jim.
Why would the union ask for or give notice if they are willing to go along with the continuation of the contract?
Why would they give the notice in that circumstance? You're right, they wouldn't give the notice, but Sergeant Wells admitted that he was negotiating for a rollover and that in those circumstances he was trying to persuade Mr. McQueen to do so. He then had a discussion with him about a counteroffer where we said, we'll counterpropose what you're having in terms of what you've offered, and he said, I'll get with my folks and we'll get back to you. And then on March 25th, he talked with his union folks and he said, and the minutes reflect this, that they went into an executive session regarding negotiation, and then further, he admitted on the record, I told the union that we would try to reach agreement on these three points, which it's undisputed were tethered to the issue of whether there would be a rollover of this contract.
I'd like to follow up on Justice Wright's question.
Yes.
When the city was taking the position that the notice deadline was April 1, 2013, was the police union taking the same position or were they taking a different position?
They have taken a different position that it was April 1st of 2014. But that discussion, there's a dispute in terms of what was discussed in that February meeting in terms of that particular deadline. Mr. McQueen said, hey, neither one of us gave notice. We could have forced a rollover. We're not going to do that. And then Sergeant Wells said he disagreed and they saw that as an April 1 deadline. And that would just add further, Justice Wright, to the notion of how could we rely.
Well, didn't the union tell you at the first meeting that they would not, or they wanted to extend the contract?
They did. At that meeting said that they were
proposing. On February 27th, they said we wanted to extend the contract. And then the city articulates three things they want to change in that contract, which would be the DROP and the contribution of $400,000 to the pension plan and the determination of who could take their vehicles home after work.
Right.
Well, when they said they were willing to extend the contract, what did the city believe at that time?
What did the city believe about?
When the union said, we want the contract to roll over.
Right. And they said that they offered that, and Mr. McQueen said, I will get back with my folks, and we will with you. And then he presented that if we had those three conditions and could reach agreement on them, we could do a rollover. Mm-hmm. And that was the response, and that was the belief. And then Sergeant Wells said, I'll get back with my folks.
Excuse me, but your waiver and estoppel issues, are they a question of law or a question of fact?
They are a question of law, and the facts support that there was a waiver here. If I may, I'm down to less than 2 minutes. I'd like to reserve that for a rebuttal, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dowd, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I have a 21-year-old son who attends TCU. He has entered into a lease for an apartment outside of the campus, has a pool, extremely excited. He and his four roommates have enjoyed having people over. The terms of that lease require that the landowner goes ahead and mows the yard. They clean up for themselves, and they enjoy the place. And so now we're about a month prior to the time of the lease expiration. And they want to keep the place over the course of the summer. And the terms of that agreement provide that unless there is a written notice given by the landowner or the tenant, that that will, in fact, carry over through the summer. So Sean's out at the grocery store and runs into the landlord. He says, I love this place. It's wonderful. We have friends over. It's at the end of our budget. I mean, we're struggling to pay for this, but we love this place. And we intend on keeping it over the summer because we've looked at the market, and this is the cheapest place we can find. So Mr. Bush, the landowner, goes back and he says, I'm not charging them enough. I think I better go ahead and reconsider the terms of this. And now we are about 13 days before the time of the expiration of this agreement. Mr. Bush picks up the phone and says, listen, Sean, we got to renegotiate some terms here. You guys are going to mow that yard. I'm not going to pay this guy to do that anymore. I'm going to save those dollars. I started a cleaning company. I want you guys to go ahead and pay for cleaning of this place one day a month or one day a week. You're like, we can't afford that. By the way, you can't have parties anymore. Shock and awe from that statement. And he goes back and he says, I can't agree to that. Plus, I got four other roommates I got to talk to about this. 13 days passed, and the roommates are talking amongst each other, going, what should we do? Well, we can't agree to that. And that 13th day passes. No written notice is given by the landowner. Obviously, Sean and his friends aren't going to give written notice because they love the place. So what do? They throw a party that night. In celebration of the rent extension. Landowner sees that, says, this is outrageous. You guys are out. Find another place to live for the summer. Unless you want to go ahead and sit down and talk about paying for my cleaning service, taking over this lawn care, and making sure that nobody comes over to this place anymore. So what happened here? We had a situation where the city, through its own admissions, got together with the mayor in the fall of 2012, understood that the agreement had already rolled over. Yet they took it upon themselves to go ahead and meet with the union in February the following year. And by all admissions...
Given that statement, would it be possible for the union and the city to renegotiate parts of the contract if they both agreed?
Correct. They could. But that would be simply through an MOU, which would be isolated to a particular aspect of the agreement.
So if the city wanted to address the DROP and the contributions to the pension plan and the taking home of the cars, and the union agreed to that for some reason, you could modify your contract.
This is Sean could say to that landowner, listen, we'll take over the mowing in the yard because we probably want to keep this house for the next year. We want to make sure that you're going to offer that to us. So if you want a workable agreement with your landowner, maybe you're going to concede to something. But
Let me ask you, according to the record, the first contact with regard to the contract was on February 27th of 2014.
Correct.
And at that time, you outlined and the city outlined their bargaining objectives?
We talked about their thoughts, yes.
Okay. Did you tell the city at that time that the union was not seeking to modify the contract and would accept a rollover?
Correct.
And what other conversations occurred subsequent to that that indicated any change in the union's position?
No. And one of the glaring pieces of evidence was the minutes that were eventually shown, encapsulated, where Mr. McQueen had the opportunity to go ahead and redline through if there was inaccuracies, and it was right within that minute. I was surprised by Mr. Wells when he indicated his suggestion to roll over the contract for 1 year with no strings attached. That was the statement. Standing by one's agreement doesn't constitute the commencement of negotiations. When we look at the statement of the city within their own brief, page 10, the city admits Wells, during this second conversation of 6 minutes, said he didn't have the authority to accept anything. So between the time of the commencement of these discussions in February until April 1st, the only other thing that occurred was a single 6-minute phone call where John says, I have no authority to accept anything.
Are you talking about what?
John Wells,
okay. And what did the city indicate in that telephone conversation to the union?
That they had three concerns that they wanted to address: the drop program, take-home vehicles, and the additional contributions.
And did the union at that time indicate they were in agreement with those requests?
No.
What did the union say?
The union's position has always been additional pension contributions, which is complete. Thorny issue for the union because of the previous concessions that they put in place, that additional contributions would never be accepted.
And the amount of that contribution that the city wanted was how much?
$400,000.
What is the take-home vehicle thing? Was that just something where the officers could drive their vehicles home after work and park
Correct.
Them at their house?
There was a question as to whether there were appropriate individuals being given vehicles. You might have a officer that finds themselves within the central station that never leaves the central station. Why do they have a car when you have maybe another officer that has to go out to scenes and is using his own vehicle, costs an expense of gas? It's a benefit for whoever gets to take home vehicles. And there's a question of the allocation of the
And was there really an issue on the DROP with the IRS? What was that?
The DROP was simply a suggestion by the city that the whole drop program was going to be dismantled as a result of an IRS ruling. The union didn't agree with that. They didn't believe that that was the case. And, in fact, it proved to be that that wasn't the case. Those were things that were discussed later on after April 1st of 2013.
So there was there some discussion at some point in time about a memorandum of understanding?
Correct.
When did that occur?
And the memorandum of understanding came in, again, simply similar to my analogy I was trying to strike for you. They wanted to basically engage in some workable relationship to talk about, let's resolve things that aren't substantive. We agree that maybe some people are receiving vehicles that shouldn't, and maybe there should be reallocation. But the chief just can't do that unilaterally. There has to be some negotiation and agreement with council.
When was the memorandum of understanding drafted by the union?
That would have been after the point in time that parties had, the city had received a letter from our offices indicating, listen, we already had a contract rollover. There was a contract extension for another year. Any issues with respect to the take-home vehicles is going to have to be constructed through a memorandum of understanding, and they agreed. We drafted the memorandum of understanding at the direction of Mr. McQueen, sent it to his office, unfortunately never shared it with the chief.
It never was negotiated? Never was signed?
It was never signed.
Okay.
So in this instance, we believe that our position was well taken. We simply filed a declaratory action, showing the language within the answer that the defendants filed in paragraph 4. They acknowledged that they never gave notice. Very simple issue to present to the district court. Our claim for fees arises as a result of these defenses that have been raised that are disingenuous. The city understood through their own interpretation the contract had expired and had rolled over because notice was not given. Yet they go ahead and raise these defenses, which elongate this case, create 2 days of trial, banker boxes of materials, and a great cost to the union. Our fees request is well taken because we believe that the positions asserted by the city in this instance are disingenuous. When I looked at counsel's brief, it seems to be one that he is stating that the costs are only associated with costs assigned to the attorney. But when you look at the actual statute, it says either your attorney or the party that raises these frivolous defenses. And in this case, it was frivolous, and the party is the city of Omaha.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
He has a minute.
A minute and 41 seconds, Mr. Hedekin.
The evidence established that there was an unequivocal waiver in this case. Negotiation began both before and after April 1st without written notice. Sergeant Wells himself said, in response to my question, that during the time that he was talking to Mr. McQueen on April 18th in the bargaining meeting, He, in fact, was negotiating the three strings that Mr. McQueen, the city, had identified as what the city wanted to go with the rollover. There can be no more unequivocal and definitive and unambiguous waiver of Article 47's provisions than to begin negotiations both before April 1st and continue them after April 1st with the full bargaining committees, with bargaining rules, only the discussion of the 2014 terms of the rollover, than to do all of those things without the notification. It is more definitive still that Sergeant Wells, when he testified on the stand, initially said that he told Mr. McQueen, when Mr. McQueen contacted him about a comment from the union, Firefighters Union, that the city had effed up and not given notice and caused a rollover of the contract, Sergeant Wells initially said, "No, I told Mr. McQueen that the contract had rolled forward," until I impeached him with the deposition in which he admitted that he had never told Mr. McQueen that.
Well, did the union have to give notice to the city of its intent not to roll over the contract?
It didn't have to give notice of its intent, but
Judge, did it give the city notice of its intent not to roll over the contract?
It offered to reach an agreement with the city not to roll over. Well, that was the offer, and then there was a counteroffer, and then they negotiated.
I thought at the February 27th meeting or discussion that the city told, or that the union told the city that it wasn't intending to roll over the contract.
Yeah, but it framed that, and Sergeant Wells himself said that he understood he had to persuade Mr. McQueen to accept that, because if he didn't persuade Mr. McQueen to do that, then the city could have issued notice. And he gave Mr. McQueen every reason to believe, through the conduct before and the conduct after, that that notice was not required.
Well, conduct after the deadline would not make a darn bit of difference, would it?
It absolutely would. Because
if you don't give written notice before April 1st, how can you be influenced after that date into not giving what you were required to do by April 1?
But, Judge, what they did is that the union entered negotiating rules and negotiated terms of the rollover after April 1st without the written notice. And Sergeant Wells also requested and received that written notice from Mr. McQueen after April 1st.
Well, did the city or did the union ever concede to the city that it would accept the $400,000 payment into the pension plan?
No, they rejected that in that April 18th meeting.
Right.
Thank you. I ask that you reverse the district court and remand this to the district court with directions that the party resume their negotiations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next case of the day is Brandel versus City of Madison. Mr. Stratton, good morning.
Thank you. May it please the court, I am Doug Stratton.